Hi, and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West. I am Quiva, and I am joined by my friend MJ.
Hello.
So, we're moving on to Chapter 4 today, and in Chapter 3, the Stone Monkey, the Handsome Monkey King, Sun Wukong, armed himself with an 8-ton iron staff, became double immortal, made all other monkeys immortal, armed 47,000 of the other now immortal monkeys, and was offered a job by God in an attempt to keep him out of trouble.
I love the phrasing double immortal. I just find that great.
He's immortal in two ways now.
He asserted his immortality. Sungwoo Karen made an appearance. he asked to speak to the manager of death.
Of death, yes.
Which was just kind of... I've been doing a little reading around the cultural context of it and trying very, very hard not to spoil myself, which made the whole thing very difficult. I say that like I put a ton of effort into it. I haven't read very deeply into it at all, and I really would love to pick up a couple of books that were recommended to me on it as soon as I can figure out a way to do that, which A, would mean that delivery people don't need to put themselves at risk, and B, means I don't need to give money to the great big evil river corporation. But yeah, I know a little bit about who was emperor at the time, several of the battles that were going on during the time period that it was written, some of the Chinese military operations at the time, and what else? Some things, some other things.
Well, that's good. That's good, because I haven't really read much about the history of this period, other than a couple things that are very directly related to this story. So,
I mean, I didn't want to spoil myself, because I really do truly love reacting to the general batshittery of the entire thing. But I did kind of start thinking about, okay, how would I feel if this was a novel written during like the reign of Cromwell, and you know, some yank or whoever came onto a podcast and started utterly misunderstanding where the satire in the novel was coming from, and just kind of accidentally coming to the conclusion that Cromwell was a great guy, actually.
That's fair. We don't want to modest proposal ourselves.
Also, fabulous term, and I will be stealing it and using it. So I'm a little more informed now, and not very much so. I'll try get a little bit better as we go on.
I should probably do the same, especially because I'm the person who's not meant to be coming into this blind.
I don't know. We could have a kind of cool dynamic where, you know, you're telling me the story, I'm telling you the history of it.
Yeah.
Although, you know, if you want to do more work and me less work, that's great. That's fabulous. Again, I love the not doing work portion of this podcast.
I say I should do it, but that means I probably won't.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair.
It takes an awful lot of time just to write and edit this as it is. In any case, Wukong is now traveling to heaven, the gold star of Venus, to take his new appointment. Being a big show-off, he races ahead and arrives at the South Heaven Gate before Venus does. It's guarded, obviously, and he starts complaining loudly about being barred from entry when he was invited there. And Venus manages to catch up with him, and Wukong complains about this to his face. Because, yeah, he is incredibly entitled. Venus takes it well, he just laughs it off and explains to the guards, or explains to Wukong that the guards just don't know who he is yet. And he leads Wukong inside. And the palace is described in loving detail in a poem. It's all jade and gold and colourful mists somehow.
Ooh, pretty. You gotta get those ornamental mists in.
Yeah, they have some pretty great magic fog machines.
House plants are out, colourful mists are in. No, never houseplants out. I want to apologize to all 12 of my named houseplants right now. I won't. Because you will have to edit that out and it will be very boring. But I think Jeremy, my parlor palm, was in earshot when I said that, so I'll just apologize very quickly. I'm sorry, Jeremy. I love you very much.
I mean, you can have both. I'm sure the plants would appreciate like misty, moisture filled air.
I mean, they're mostly succulents because those are the ones that I don't kill.
Fair.
So maybe not. I really want to get air plants though, and they would. And they're just little. They grow like literally in the air. They don't need soil or much watering, and I love them. But they're also very expensive.
Magic plants? I've not heard of these.
Magic plants? No, they're very, very cool. They're rainforest-y plants. They just need to be kept moist, but otherwise, you know, very, you know, executive dysfunction junction. What day is it? Did I water these fuckers? Friendly. But yeah, no, I'll see when IKEA starts stocking the colorful mists. I will definitely consider it.
In any case, they walk into the Jade Emperor's court, and Venus prostrates himself, and Monkey just stands still next to him because he's clueless.
Okay.
Venus announces that he brought the bogus immortal, and they keep calling him the bogus immortal. No, he doesn't actually mind this title.
Okay.
Like, the Jade Emperor even asks, oh, who's the bogus immortal? And Monkey just bows and says, oh, that's me.
Yo, he's reclaiming it.
All the officials are completely horrified at the lack of respect and call for him to be put to death.
Ooh.
The Jade Emperor doesn't mind. He just says that, you know, he's from the region below. He says he's only recently acquired the form of a human being, which is kind of a thing. It's kind of just a thing throughout it. Like, it's kind of he's achieved enough power and spiritual enlightenment that he kind of is considered a human in a way now.
Right.
There's also, like, throughout the book, there's like tigers who have become human as well, and all these kind of other monsters that have taken a human form. And I don't think that necessarily means he looks like a human, because he is still, like, described for the rest of the book as basically just looking like a monkey.
But it's kind of the human aspect of reason.
This is the kind of thing I probably should have read more on, like you were talking about the cultural context. It seems to be, yeah, much more of a kind of a measure of his like, spiritual learning.
Okay, interesting.
The Jade Emperor says, you know, we'll pardon him this time for his ignorance of court etiquette. He doesn't know any better. So Wukong finally takes the hint, and he bows much deeper with his hands folded in respect, and
okay. That's
kind of seen as good enough for the moment.
Yeah, he gets it now. You can't fault him for just throwing him into a social situation with a new kind of set of protocols and just expecting him to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with the monkey on this one, definitely.
The Jade Emperor asks his officials, you know, what positions do we actually have vacant right now? And it turns out the only free position is supervising the Imperial stables.
I feel like this is not going to be of great welcome to Sun Wukong.
So he's fine with it. He's fine with it now anyway. He's just like, okay, cool, that's my job. And the emperor declares him, and this is awkwardly translated. It's translated as Ban Horse Plague, because it's literally like it's a made up title just in for this novel.
It's just like, we're literally just creating a job for you to keep you out of trouble.
Yeah. And so, like, it's the three characters, B, Ma, and Wen. And Anthony, you just translated it like word for word and put it together into a title. If you read Arthur Wildey's translation, he doesn't translate it at all. He just writes down Bima Wen. So I don't have a better thing to call this than Ban Horse Plague. If you want to come up with a catchier translation, I'm happy to use something else, but
Ban Horse Plague.
And there's a footnote explaining that apparently in Chinese folklore, monkeys are said to be able to warn off illnesses from horses. So it's not like entirely made up. There's some kind of, yeah,
okay,
cultural
cool.
context where this makes a bit more sense.
And it definitely does sound a lot more, you know, prestigious than mucking them out.
Yeah.
Although I imagine, again, as a recovering horse person, that it would be a lot of that.
Oh, well, he's just like the manager. So.
Oh, okay. So he's just telling other people to do the dirty work.
Yeah, so he gets brought out to the stables, and there's 1,000 horses there, and he does a personal inspection of each horse, makes a big show of it. But then after that, there's just stable staff that do everything else. He doesn't really have to do much. He just takes the job. He's happy out. He has a position working in heaven. He's cool with it.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's stable manager, but it's stable manager to the literal gods.
Yeah. So and to the emperor of the gods.
Yeah. Yeah, so not big daddy god.
Yeah.
Not even none of these lesser gods.
So half a month later, the heads of various departments in the palace are holding a small welcome banquet, and Monkey asks, "What sort of rank is Banhorse Plague anyway?"
Ooh.
The only response is, it's Banhorse Plague. The rank and the title are the same thing. And
it's exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah, and Wukong is like, okay, but like, what level is it at? Like, how high up is it in the chain?
You can really, really tell that this was written by a civil servant now. It's like, is it a grade 4 position? I applied for a grade 4 position.
And they kind of say, well, it doesn't really have a place in, like, the hierarchy. The title, it doesn't really have a place. Mm. And Wukong is like, oh, right, so it's, like, it's at the very, very top, then. It's just above everything else. And they're like, no, no.
That's the point at which you say, sure. Yeah.
They say it's more like the exact opposite of that.
Oh, no. No, that's not how you spin it. No. No, you say, well, you know, it's given that you have the specific talents which we haven't incorporated into our hierarchy before, we aren't exactly sure where to place you in the grade structure, but we are aware that the role very much has its own importance. So we're actually just placing it outside of that structure just because you are so unique.
Yes.
That is how you deal with a fucking narcissist.
The BBC show, or the show that BBC dubbed, it was originally a Japanese show, A Monkey, that I mentioned in the intro, did the scene very well. I will say, that show, they did seem to like be putting effort into translating it correctly and keeping the story in place and not just making a joke of it. But one of the ideas, you know, BBC in the 70s, one of the ideas they had for making it authentic was everyone is putting on dodgy Chinese accents.
Oh no.
Yeah, so there's that, but otherwise the scene is actually done really well in that show. They do like a whole thing of like he's gesturing up at his hands like, oh, it's like up here, is it? And they're like, they like
no.
Lower his hand slowly and is like down here? No, no, more than that. Wukong takes this about as well as someone who you'd expect, who on finding himself in the afterlife demanded to speak to the manager.
Yeah.
He shouts, I quit. He kicks over his own desk, takes his staff, thrashes his own office, and just leaves and goes home.
Oh my god. Does he face any consequences for this?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay, so he just basically rock star cliched his office and just fucks off back to Earth, basically.
Yeah, and he finds he's actually been gone for more than 10 years because a day in heaven is a year on Earth.
Ah.
And the other monkeys are like, oh, you were gone for so long. What were you doing in heaven?
What did you learn? Tell us.
And he just shouts, don't talk about it. I'm too mortified. And then he proceeds Aww. To rant about it at length.
Okay. Oh, don't ask me. Don't get me started. Well, since you insist.
Yeah.
yeah. Oh, dear.
So they throw him a big party to try and cheer him up because that's basically all they ever do.
I mean, it's worked in the past.
True. And in the middle of this, two one-horned demon kings show up to pay tribute to the Monkey King and to congratulate him on, you know, getting a job in heaven and having returned and all this grand stuff. And they give him a nice red and yellow robe, and Wukong immediately appoints them vanguard commanders, marshals of the forward regiments, because he's really into merit-based promotions.
Okay, I can see that. Although this does seem like the perfect opportunity to lie on your CV. You know, it feels like working for the god of gods is something that people are just going to be impressed by. They're not going to ask for too many details. You can waffle about it and kind of like, well, you know, they wanted me in the organization so much. I was given my own unique position. And like that, you could spin that on LinkedIn, probably.
Wukong takes a different approach. So
of course he does.
The two newly appointed commanders ask him, What job did he have in heaven? And he goes on another rant about being made a banhorse plague. And the two lads are lick arses. They reply, "You have such great magic powers. You shouldn't have such a low rank. You should have a much greater title, like Great Sage, equal to heaven," which is a thing they just made up on the spot, but Wukong absolutely loves this title and has a giant banner saying, "The Great Sage, equal to heaven," hung up outside the cave, and demands to be called that from now on. So that's how he deals with it.
Okay. That's on brand.
Yeah. So the Jade Emperor finds out that the plan to turn Wukong into an upstanding citizen has had less than stellar results. He sends Li Jing and his son Nata to arrest Wukong. Li Jing is a god in mythology outside of this novel. He's the Chinese version of a Buddhist deity named Vashravanya, who in turn comes from a Hindu god called Kubera. So he has credentials. He goes well back. And he's also called the Pagoda Bearer. And he's often depicted literally carrying a pagoda tower in his hand.
Okay.
Didn't really find the details of why that is, but it's like a thing. But anyway, yeah, and he's appointed Grand Marshal for the mission, and Nata is put in charge of the Three Platform Assembly of the Saints. I have no idea what that means. I just like to name out all the grandiose titles everyone gets.
I'm thinking IKEA, I'm sorry.
Because of Three Platform Assembly?
Yeah.
You have IKEA on the brain.
I really want a new bookshelf and my desk is falling apart.
Reasonable.
I hate going to IKEA, though. I like being able to see the exit and the progress of linear time and not be trapped in an endless maze of non-Euclidean geography punctuated by meatball breaks.
Well, there's a trick to it, because you can just go in the back door and go directly to the part where you order stuff.
Amazing. Interesting. Thank you so much for that tip.
But yeah,
I'm gonna file that away.
IKEA is a like
hellscape.
Yeah, it's a dangerous like weak point between dimensions.
Here be dragons with unpronounceable Swedish names.
But yeah, speaking of various grandiose titles, they also bring along officers which include Mighty Spirit God and the Fish Belly General. I love Fish Belly General. I didn't look that up. I'm just going with it.
Serious psoriasis problem.
Li Jing, Nata, etc. go up and set up a camp outside the Water Curtain Cave and send in Mighty Spirit God to demand Wukong's surrender. There's a poem describing Wukong getting ready for a fight that includes the line, "Hanging past his shoulders were two ears, forked and hard."
That's an interesting image.
Yeah, I think there's a couple parts where they describe like really long earlobes as a character feature, and it's actually meant to be like, I think it's actually meant to be a sign of something. Oh, I looked this up, but I forgot to write it down. There is something about it that it represents something, but it's actually a good thing.
I will look it up.
This is more of my being really bad at cultural context.
I will be doing that now. I have an article from Of course, of course. well, from National Geographic, we have to Buddhists, Buddha's long earlobes symbolize conscious rejection of the material world in favor of spiritual enlightenment. But I got quite distracted because I also found an article from Cosmopolitan.
Oh God, no!
Which is the seven types of earlobes and what they reveal about your personality.
Okay, that's.
I mean,
like, I don't know. Like, I was gonna say, oh, I was expecting something worse, but maybe earlobe phrenology is probably worse, to be honest, yeah. than weird earlobe sex things.
Yeah, if I were given the choice, I would go for the weird earlobe sex things because, you know, just it's very close to skull measuring in my in my opinion. Buddha. A rejection of the material world in favor of spiritual enlightenment is what my very quick and cursory Google search came up with. Rest assured, I will be checking out that Cosmopolitan article later. because just what? What?
Just,
I'm not here.
Self-consciously with your phone out with the Cosmopolitan article in one hand and a mirror in the other.
No, I'm just not. I want to know where this return of phrenology is coming from. Because I'm like, it was a few weeks ago that there was just.
I think it's coming from an intern who had to have five articles out by the end of the day.
I mean, probably. I'm just my brain is trying to connect it to the Spectrum News article a few weeks ago that analyzed head shape in autistic people.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. We have larger heads, apparently. And I mean, there may be some genuine scientific interest behind that, but it just, the way it was phrased, it was very phrenology-like. It was just, why are you measuring the skulls? Why? Just, no.
Please put the calipers down.
Put it down. No, let's not go back there. This did not lead to good places. This led to very bad places.
Oh God! Moving from skull measurements
and phrenology
and forked earlobes.
As we wish we could, we thought we had.
Monkey points to his new banner and demands, Monkey points out to his new banner and demands to be officially promoted to. Again, I repeat the title of Great Sage, equal to heaven.
Oh my God.
Or he threatens he's going to beat the Jade Emperor's arse himself.
I mean, in fairness, he probably could.
Yeah, they really underestimate him. Mighty Spirit God laughs and just starts attacking Wukong immediately with his axe. And they duel for a while until Mighty Spirit God gets tired and he leaves an opening for Wukong. And he's only able to block Wukong just in time, but Wukong smashes his axe in half. So, not so mighty Spirit God fleeds back to camp. See, I was very clever there with that.
Yeah, you were. I appreciated it. I enjoyed it.
Lee is pissed, and he calls for Mighty to be executed on the spot for making them look bad.
Mm.
But Nata asks for a stay of execution while he goes to fight Wukong himself to see is Wukong actually this strong or is Mighty Spirit God being incompetent because they think he's just being incompetent.
I can kind of see where they're coming from here. Not on the whole executing you for not doing your job correctly, but it's kind of like, you know, actual God versus Tiny Stone Monkey. It does not go the way you expect. You're looking for the most obvious explanation.
Yeah, and again, he's like 4 foot tall.
Ah, short fuckers represent. Sorry, I am 5'1.5", so I appreciate this.
Still taller than Monkey. I keep swapping between the names Monkey and Sun Wukong and these a lot. He's not really called Monkey in Anthony Yu's translation. It's not really a title he's called on his own that much, but it's what he's generally called in Arthur Wally's translation. I just kind of like it.
Okay, yeah, it's cute.
But in any case, Nata goes to fight Wukong himself. Wukong laughs at him, says he's too young to fight, and he doesn't want to fight someone who still has all their baby teeth.
Aww. I mean, this guy is how many centuries old at this point, though?
Yeah, he's at least 400 years old.
Yeah.
I can't remember if there was another... he was like 400 years old when he died the first time. I don't know if there was a time... I don't think there was a time skip since then.
No, just the 10 years he was in heaven.
Yeah. So, in response, Nata turns into a giant monster with three heads and six arms, each of them holding a different weapon. He has a monster-stabbing sword, a monster-cleaving scimitar, a monster-binding rope, a monster-taming club, an embroidered ball, and a fiery wheel. I'm not sure how effective a weapon an embroidered ball is, if I'm being honest.
I was just thinking, one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, I don't think there's any further explanation of that. There's probably, again, some, like, background that I'm completely missing and was too lazy to look up.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how many Cosmopolitan articles I'm going to find on embroidered balls.
There's even like a poem here, like describing the weapons, and it's just the monster binding rope was like a flying snake. The monster taming club was like the head of a wolf. The lightning propelled fiery wheel was like darting flames. Hither and thither, the embroidered ball rotated.
Okay.
It's just like, after all that, it's just like, and then the ball rotated.
Interesting. So these embroidered silk balls are a symbol of the Zhuang ethnic minority I'm going to mispronounce this, I apologize, of the Guangxi province in China. And if I do remember, that was one of the places that rebelled under Emperor Wanli, who was emperor at the time that this was written. So that's kind of cool.
Interesting.
There does appear to have been some rebellions from this ethnic minority throughout the kind of 1500s to 1600 Ming Dynasty, I believe. I can't be entirely sure on that. I have not done enough work, but it definitely is a... the embroidered ball is definitely a symbol from this, from this particular minority. So that's quite cool, actually.
I wonder, is there any tie between that group and the Nata himself? Then, because he's also like a figure of mythology outside of this novel.
Quite cool to look into. For those of you who were curious, no. From the first and second page of Google, there were no results from Cosmopolitan on embroidered balls. Thank Christ. Like, you do you, just, you know, be careful. And do not take kink advice from Cosmopolitan on any matter, ever. Ever.
Or any advice.
Or any advice. I don't know, the earlobe stuff is probably harmless. I'll report back on the earlobe phrenology later.
So Nata turns into a giant monster anyway. Wukong turns into a similar monster holding three iron staffs. And their weapons apparently split into thousands of weapons and clash like raindrops and meteors in the air, and their fight causes earthquakes. It's pretty dramatic.
So early sort of drone warfare then, I guess.
Yeah. And this is all like a lot of the fight scenes, that's told in a big dramatic poem, which is a really interesting way of doing it, and kind of, I don't know, it alludes to like the turning into thousands is, you know, poetic imagery, so maybe that's actually just not meant to be taken that literally, and just like they were moving so fast or something, I'm not entirely sure.
Fair.
Eventually, Wukong plucks one of his hairs and does his body duplication trick to distract Nata while he attacks him from behind.
Sweet.
Nata isn't fast enough to dodge and takes a blow to the shoulder, and he has to retreat. And Li is very worried after seeing his son was actually defeated, and he and Nata go back to heaven to report what's going on. Meanwhile, Wukong throws another massive party to celebrate proving he is actually equal to heaven.
Fair on that one, actually. You know, you did literally beat two gods now. That's,
His six Monster King mates show up and decide to all give themselves equally sacrilegious titles. So, the Bull Monster King declares himself the Great Sage parallel with heaven. The Dragon Monster King declares himself the Great Sage covering the ocean. The Garuda Monster King, the Great Sage united with heaven. The Giant Lynx King, the Great Sage mover of mountains. The Macaque King, the Telltale Great Sage. And the Orangutan King, the God-routing Great Sage. All great titles.
How does Monkey feel about this?
Oh, I think he's fine. I think he's into it. Oh,
okay.
So, back in heaven, the Jade Emperor is not too happy with the idea of naming an upstart monkey equal to heaven. I constantly find that title hilarious. But Venus steps in again and suggests just letting him have it. If an empty title is all he wants, they don't actually have to give him any privileges or appointments. The Jade Emperor agrees to this plan and sends down Venus again with the offer. And Wukong is more than happy to accept and returns to the Jade Emperor's palace to receive his new title.
I have a fancy title and I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, basically, they build an entire new official residence for him and build two departments, which are called the Department of Peace and Quiet and the and the Department of Serene Spirit.
I like the idea of the Department of Peace and Quiet.
Yeah, it's like literally your job is to
shut up. Just leave us alone, please.
And both departments are staffed with officials whose only job is to make Wukong feel important.
Oh. Okay.
You might not think this is a very good plan, but you know, you'll have to listen to the next episode to find out how well it works.
Okay.
Because this is the end of chapter 4.
Excellent.
And if you want an idea of how well this works, the title of chapter 5 is Disrupting the Peach Festival, the Great Sage Steals Elixir, With Revolt in Heaven, Many Gods Would Seize the Fiend. Honestly, having watched Dragon Ball Z as a child, It's very funny to me that one of the things that kind of stayed true to the very original source of this novel in that TV show is how, like, episodes would end with the narrator saying, "Oh, do you want to find out what happens next time? tune into the next episode," and then it tells you the name of the next episode, and the name is just like, "Frieza defeated." So I think that's all I had for this episode. I didn't have any footnotes.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me on again. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to see what happens with this peach festival.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's going to go off without a hitch.
Yep. Absolutely.
Going to be a really good time. No one will be upset.
Yeah.
Great party.
Peace and quiet will reign.
And so, self-promotion stuff. I am on Twitter at Oakreef, OAKRWF, and this podcast has a Twitter account, Monkey King Pod. And MJ does loads of stuff.
MJ does some things. Yeah, I'm on Twitter at TAOISEACHO Trash. That's Taoiseach of Trash, for any Irish people will know what that is. I'm on Instagram at MJ Stokes, that's EMJAY Stokes. That's not how my initials are spelled. First time I was ever on a podcast, the host misspelled my name, but they didn't misspell my last name, which is Stokes. They misspelled my initials as EMJAY, and all right, but it's my Insta handle now. I do a bunch of shows on the Hysteria Network. That's facebook.com/Hysteria Ireland. We're a comedy collective. We do lots of cool things. I have a show called Burning Shit where I get comedians to set things on fire and talk about their feelings. the Nerd Herd, where I get them to talk about things that they really love. And they did What Now, which is just about like really ballsy moves from history. We generally get a lot of con artists, but you know, it varies. It varies. It's cool. So look at those things, please.
Goodbye. Please listen to the next episode. I don't know how to end podcasts.
Next episode, like, comment, subscribe, other such conventions.
You can find this podcast wherever it is you already found it from, because you're listening to it.
Yep.